Ladies and gentlemen, ghosts and ghouls, and everybody in between, welcome to The Most High Show. I am your host, Sarah with an H, and today joining me in the honorable seats of service, we have this guy, Clayton. And then joining us for the first time, we have Katie, right? Yes. Not Kat or Catherine.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for joining us here tonight on the Unhinged special of The Most High Show.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
Yeah, tonight, you know, as we move away from blistering summer heat and move into the colder season and fall weather and fall activities, I thought, you know, it'd be a good time to, you know, bring up the topic of relapse and relapse prevention. You know, for any of our listeners who might be entering their first fall sober and might be a little nervous about it. So to start us off, Katie, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about like your recovery journey, just a little synopsis.
Okay, my name is Katie. I am coming up on a birthday soon. In a couple months, I'll be 27. The first time I got sober, I was 16, but I didn't have connections. And I didn't know what really to do about it. So I joined a sober living when I was 22, so about 4 years ago. Started doing some program stuff. I've worked in recovery. I've worked at an integrative psychiatric clinic. So I've had some cool experiences. I've made a lot of good friends. Thankful to be here.
Thankful to be here. Thankful to be sober.
Thankful to be sober. Definitely.
And what about you, Clayton?
Hey, guys. Clayton. First time going into a meeting was at 17 years old. So I've been around the program of recovery for a long time. In and out a lot, so the topic of relapse prevention is probably a good one. I do, unfortunately, I've got, you know, quite a few white chips to speak of, so I don't have any professional credentials, but I do have a lot of street credentials, I would say. But yeah.
All right. And so neither one of you, this is your first time getting sober. You've tried at least one time and or multiple times before.
Many times.
It's not a competition.
It's not, but it's many, part of my story.
Many times.
No, I mean, same here. This is only my second time giving it an honest try. But when I relapsed, it was on Halloween. So.
I really do think for me to have made it this far is a gift. So yeah. I'm really thankful that I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. And with each time that you guys have... I guess relapsed. I'm kind of tired of saying that word now. It doesn't feel real anymore. But what would you say, like, was there a common theme amongst it? Could you have prevented it?
Definitely mental health, like really big emotions. And I think the relapse happens before the relapse. Absolutely. Like complacency had been a big thing for me, and just getting unplugged. So if I am complacent, I will get unplugged. If I stop doing the things that I know I need to be doing, because if I think I got it on my own, I definitely don't. So getting unplugged, big thing.
Like getting unplugged from a sober network.
Yes, a sober network. I've made great, fantastic friends. So just stuff like that, that if I get away from that or isolate myself, I'm much more prone to saying, you know, screw it and making a poor decision if my emotions get really big and hard to handle.
What about for you?
Yeah, I like the unplugged thing. I think lack of connection has definitely been a part of my story as well. When you feel like you've got it, that's a dangerous place to be, because you never really have it. You have to keep working towards it. I have to stay plugged in to my recovery community. But I mean, there's been a number of different reasons I would say that I kind of went back out. But for a long time, I didn't understand addiction, or I didn't believe things about addiction. I didn't believe that addiction was a disease. I didn't believe that it was chronic. I didn't believe that it was progressive. And those misbeliefs ended up kicking my ass. So, you know, with furthering my education on myself and my addiction, I think that helped me a lot in coming around and realizing that I do have this disease. I'm not going to outgrow this disease, and this disease gets worse and worse as time goes on. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of personal experimentation to accept those things. I don't really believe things at face value a lot of times. I don't, you know, accept things as they're told to me. I kind of have to live them and experience them and live them myself and see that. So so I learned those lessons the hard way. But yeah, so I'm thankful to be here because of that.
All right. And so on the topic of like prevention, so looking back at your most recent relapse, what would you say you would tell your past self, being like, do this different? Because I know you guys both mentioned staying plugged in. So what did you get unplugged last time, or did you just get a case of the fuck it's and just?
I think that kind of went hand in hand for me. A case of the fuck it's and getting unplugged kind of went together. I think, like Clayton was saying, I had to experience some things, and each setback that I've ever had, I've learned something. You know, and it doesn't, I like remembering playing out the tape, yes, but picking up the phone to call someone about how I'm actually feeling before saying fuck it is definitely something that's super important. Someone once told me once that, so it's like a practice, right? But someone once asked me right when I joined the program, when the last time I picked up the phone and just called someone to check on them and see how they were doing without talking about myself, doing that. And it is a practice, like this program and recovery, the lifestyle. So I definitely try to keep that in my practice as much as possible, so that when stuff does hit the fan, I have something like some safety nets, mm-hmm. In place. So like my friends will check on me because I check on them too. But it gets me out of myself to check on other people. I don't know if that kind of answers your question, but just certain things I have in practice, like in healthy outlets and stuff that I have done more and more, just to keep me going, yeah. moving in a forward direction.
Yeah, and I know the calling someone to check on them is a common thing, you know, people practice in, you know, recovery groups. I know for me, I've always gotten frustrated because, like, I'll call someone and I'll ask about them and they don't really want to talk about themselves, so they'll ask about me and I'm like, hold on. And so, like, I'll start those conversations, be like, hi, I don't want to talk about what's going on in my life. Tell me about yours. And then they understand, like, what that means, and they're like, okay, this is not just a normal phone call, like this is a distraction, but I still, you know, like I still care, and like I want to know what's going on in your life, but please just don't bring up mine.
Let's see, the last time that I went back out, I wasn't working a program. I had about 2 years sober at the time, and I'd taken a job where I was working, I was on the road. I was on the road for over 3 months straight. Actually didn't have a single day off for 3 months straight, and we were working 12-hour days. So I don't advise that. That can, you know, that can really wear you thin. But to be honest, I felt like I was on top of the world during that time. The job I was doing was absolutely thrilling. Everything was just, it sounds weird to say when you're working 84 hours a week, but everything was going really, really well. And it's not enough. So I wasn't planning on drinking or using, but I wasn't planning to not drink or use. And eventually, yeah, I mean, that caught up with me. And, you know, it's odd. Like, my relapses and stuff, if I'm not working a program and if I'm not really like thinking about it, my body just, my mind, I mean, it's it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it's a disease of the mind. And I can't tell you how many times it has happened where, like, I had no sort of idea that it was even coming, and my body and mind just went into this autonomous place, or this just automatic, like, all of a sudden I was drunk. I don't even remember going to the liquor store. Mm. And my body just goes on, like, autopilot and goes there. And if I don't have any sort of defense up, I don't have any sort of, I'm not made preparations to not allow that to happen. I mean, it's always a possibility. So, you know, at this point, I mean, every day I have to wake up and put on my armor and prepare myself for the day and get ready and ensure that no matter what, I'm not picking up.
Yeah. No, I like how you said that with you weren't planning to drink or use, but you weren't planning not to drink or use. Because that's, like, you know, something that, like, I've heard a lot is people say, well, you know, it sneaks up on you. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, like, with my relapse, it did not sneak up on me at all. I did that on purpose. I was planning that. I was like, I don't need this. Like, I'm good. I got this. Like, you know, it'll be better than last time. It'll be different than last time. And then, you know, and from hearing other people's stories and from my own experience, yeah, it is always different. It's just worse mm-hmm. each time.
Yeah.
But I never understood that sneaking up. So I really appreciate the way you just worded that and made something make sense for me tonight. What about that sneaking up experience? Has that ever been relevant in your story?
I think so. I think at the same time, I really think every time I've gotten unplugged is what has kind of started it for me, getting unplugged or not having, like, those connections and stuff like that. I do really well when I have a life that is full, with friends and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The cunning, baffling, and powerful thing is real, though. Really, it is a daily reprieve, so I try to, like, ask my higher power in the morning, like, please keep me sober today. And just certain things, like meditation, has been really helpful to keep me balanced throughout the day or to keep me going to bed well at night. But it can sneak up on you for sure. Or just spin out of control rather quickly, much quicker than you would imagine if you think, oh, it might be different this time, or screw it, I'm just a little bit, it's not. And then it's very hard to get out of that place.
Yeah. Mm. And that one phrase that one of my mentors will say is, you know, put the stop sign up. Because, like, my brain will do, like, it will spiral out of control quickly. And I won't think about drinking or using or anything, but it just goes to a place of morbid reflection really quickly, and it just snowballs and it gets bigger. And so my mentor was like, when you have that first thought, she was like, I want you to think of a big old stop sign. And she was like, stop, you know, because I've heard, you know, pause, but I don't understand pause. I don't sit still. The only time I sit still is an hour every week on this show. You know, but envisioning, like, oh, well, you know, I don't roll stop signs because I'm a good citizen. Envisioning having something to think of to, like, represent, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to stop. So that spiral doesn't happen, you know, because it's not necessarily like I'm having this big emotion now, so I should drink about it because that's what always worked for me in the past. Like, I'm too far away from my last drink for that to be the first thought. Mm. But if I let it go for too long, it'll be like, well, what am I doing here? Like, I might as well. And so I'll still have those, not still, but, like, I have experienced, like, those urges. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Yeah. This is not normal. I put this down.
Where it starts to look like a good idea again.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, like, and in those moments, I'll pause. Like, I will pause. I know how to do that now. and think, like, what is missing from my life right now? What do I need right now that I'm not feeding? Is it something spiritually? Is it something physical? Do I literally need to feed myself? Or do I need to go touch grass, go breathe fresh air, call somebody, do something that nurtures my soul? And so when, like, are those urges or cravings something that you guys still experience, and how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, they creep up from time to time. Luckily, they're few and far between. I will say my saving grace in early sobriety is ice cream.
Amen.
100%. Anything with sugar, I mean, being an alcoholic, alcohol has so many refined sugars and stuff in it. It's amazing that when you receive a, when you have a craving, if you just eat some sugar, I mean, like, that really works for me. So anybody out there that's early on and experiencing cravings, eat some sugar.
I heard someone take it further the other day, actually, because she specifically recommended ice cream.
Did they snort it?
Yeah, she just did a line of ice cream on the table real quick. but because ice cream, you know, it has like that milk base, so it has protein in it. Uh-huh. And so it lasts in your system longer and doesn't produce that same sugar crash as like candy or like the super process. I didn't research it. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I don't know anything. I just talk. So before you quote me on that, maybe look it up because I forgot to.
Unknowingly, the ice cream. That was the way to go.
I have heard that about sugar to help curb appetites. No, yeah. I shouldn't. I'm allergic to, well, they make dairy free, so I can do that. Oat milk's good. for me, I do have some healthy outlets, thankfully. Like I play guitar. I like to write. I love writing. It's usually poetry, usually rhymes. So that's definitely a really good way to vent for me. Nice. As well as, again, getting connected with friends and not just spending too much time alone or like down in my little room, like just sad and by myself and freaking out about a craving or something. I really am blessed that I don't have this obsession, as a daily thing. And thoughts will creep up. It is sneaky, but I have a lot of automatic negative thoughts just in general that can occur. So I try to talk to myself or like replace, oh, that thought doesn't make me feel so good. What about this thought that's actually nicer, more full of grace for myself, or something that's actually true? And sometimes it can be hard to do that. So that's why I'll try to lean on my friends in times like that. I've definitely had leaned on my friends in the past few months because they'll pour love into me and I'm very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. And you, as we were talking before the show, you shared you had a more recent relapse, right?
Yes.
And so in the last few months, like since then, it's been more like extra leaning on your friends or?
Yes. Especially, it comes and goes. It's like a cycle. The waves come in, it ebbs and flows. But yes, I've learned much more so from that. You know, and there's a quote somewhere that says a relapse can be the jarring experience needed to work more of a program or really throw myself into recovery. And that's definitely what it had been for me. I had a lot of realizations after this last time. And I really feel like my higher power has been doing for me what I couldn't do for myself and has brought me a really long way. So I'm really, that's just something to be thankful about, to feel that internally and know I'm in the right place and exactly where I'm supposed to be in this moment. That's something that I just kind of got brought to and that has been shown to me. 'Cause it's hard to just super believe, you know, sometimes. But if I have a little bit of faith, like that can grow.
Yeah.
So just hang on to a little bit. Hang on. Gets better.
Yeah, a lot of people say all you need is just a tiny little bit.
Yes.
If you have a tiny little bit, that can grow.
It can.
And, you know, a lot of people will share about, you know, when they do go back out, they are scared to come back to their recovery groups because they don't, they carry shame with them or carry like, oh, like I messed up and this is embarrassing and I don't want to let everyone down if they know, like, did you have that experience or?
I have had in the past. This past time I did not because I absolutely know that everybody is rooting for me. The people that truly care about me just want to see me get better and will cheer and just be so grateful that I'm alive and I'm coming back, like that I've kept coming back, you know? I don't think it's something I think there's a difference between like guilt and shame. Like guilt's like I shouldn't have done that, and shame is literally beating myself up into a pulp, which is not something I want to do. But yeah, I've I have felt very embarrassed before and like, wow, I messed this up, being, you know, so perfectionistic in the past. And I've grown a lot from that too. But I think it's something to be celebrated. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Progress, not
progress. Yes, progress. It is about progress because it is like a journey, right? I know people hear it's a journey, not a destination, like happiness or recovery or what have you. But it is. It's all about living in the present moment. And I've been thinking about more recently how all I ever have is the present moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what I'm going to be thinking in 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
All right, gotta make sure Chad's not texting me.
Okay.
And I know you shared about writing and poetry and mm-hmm. playing guitar is like your outlets.
Yes.
Today, how have your outlets changed over time?
Goodness, I guess I kind of will latch onto different things at times. I really like Pokemon. I'll play that sometimes. I don't watch a lot of TV. So, like, I feel like there's self-growth and like self-care as well. And there's some sort of balance in that. Like, it doesn't always have to be like me improving. There's always also like a little bit of space for me to be grateful about how far I've come and where I'm at like today. Mm-hmm. So another outlet for me is definitely being outside, like near water yes. or all the trees or what have you. Stuff like that. I love the sun. Mm-hmm. I love the sun.
The sun is pretty
the
great.
Most serious look.
I love the sun.
Thank you, sun.
Thank you for warming my skin and my right. soul simultaneously.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I'll just be like, I just need to go sit in the sun and let the sun bake out the depression.
Exactly. The vitamin D. It does a lot for you, though.
It really does. Like,
love
and
it.
What about outlets for you?
I've got a lot of them. One beautiful thing about recovery is self-discovery and getting to know yourself. Mm-hmm. And I would certainly urge everybody to really explore yourself and develop your interests, develop your hobbies. I have tons of interests and hobbies, which I love. And I have a self-care list that anytime I'm feeling anxiety or any squirrely in any type of way or something, I can literally go and refer to that list and go and do one of those things, and it usually helps a lot. Some of the ones at the top of that list, absolutely meditation. I love meditation as a personal practice. It is beautiful practice to be calm and in the present moment. You know, and I really like what you said about the. And it's a hard thing to grasp onto, but right now, in this moment, I'm exactly where I need to be. Mm-hmm. There is nothing else that I need to be doing right now. This is where I'm meant to be, and I'm very happy and content and blessed to be here right now. I didn't used to be that way. I used to always be thinking there was something else I needed to be doing, and that caused a lot of undue anxiety. Mm-hmm. So we can do without that. Other things on the list... ones that I've found particularly beneficial, especially dealing with any sort of cravings or urges, are the more physical activities. I don't like to run, but I do like to bike. I mountain bike and stuff. So anything that really gets your heart rate up, your cardio up, if you're experiencing an urge, if you've got any sort of activity that you can go and do that and release those natural endorphins and get that angst out through some physical activity, that's phenomenal. When I get back from a bike ride or something, it's melted away. I mean, it's literally gone. But I play guitar as well. I love to play music, sing. So music is a big thing. Writing in times, not so much lately, but I do really enjoy writing as a personal outlet, so I do need to pick that back up. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, find some hobbies, find some interests. You know, the more things that I have going on for me like that, they're just all more pillars of my sobriety. So they're all things that I really enjoy doing. And when I'm out there actively drinking and using, I don't do any of them. I don't do any of them. I mean, I've referenced that list, you know, and kind of thought this through. And I'm like, there is nothing on that list that I do. Nothing. And I love doing that list. anything outdoors. I love outdoors. I mean, any activity you can throw in the outdoors, I'm doing it. Nature is definitely where I find my most connectivity with God, my most spirituality, the most peace, the most energy. It's in nature for me. Thank you, son.
And I like how you said exploring yourself to try to, because when I had been out there, I didn't totally know who I was completely because, I don't know, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I just wasn't me. It was like, this was my God, the drink or the drug. And my form of worship was lying, cheating, and stealing, not like doing any of these. Like, I feel like my form of worship now is like, my higher power is the embodiment of love. So like, my form of worship now is like, I should, or I enjoy taking care of myself and the people in my life in any way that I can, whether it be any of the things you just mentioned, you know?
Yeah.
And what about when those activities don't work? Because for me, like, I'll go outside, I'll go to the gym. For me, it's not so much cardio as it is like lifting weights. I'm like, I'm going to feel strong and then my brain will feel strong and then I'll feel better. Or writing or painting or like any, because I, you know, developed lots of outlets in sobriety that were things that I did like, and I would do them while I was using, but I wasn't getting any better. It was really trash.
Well, that's true, and that's a good point. I mean, sometimes you can do a number of those things on the list and you still don't feel better. And sometimes that feeling is going to stick with you for days, weeks, months. You know, it could be circumstantial, it could be chemical imbalance, you know, there's a number of things that it could be. But we no longer get to revert back to that quick fix. Yeah. And I used alcohol a lot of times as a numbing agent to numb the way that I was feeling. Mm-hmm. I used it as, you know, an enhancer and you know, to enhance. I don't know. I used it for a number of things. When identifying my triggers, I literally found out it's everything. So
that's easy. It's casual.
It makes it tough. You know, because, I mean, I would drink when I'm happy, sad, any emotion you can throw out there, it was a reason. It was a reason to drink. And that's probably why I was drinking, you know, pretty much, except for the few hours that I was asleep, passed out. Let's see, where were we going?
With those things not working. And still
with those things not working.
Bad.
I mean, you gotta keep going. I mean, obviously, like going to a meeting, getting in. That's where having a community is so important. That's where having a higher power is so important. You know. If it's not working for me, and I mean, I go get with my friends in recovery and stuff like that. Service work, volunteering, doing something like that, getting out of self. You had mentioned earlier about calling somebody and talking to them and not talking about you, but talking about them. That will work. But, you know, I mean, the thing about being sober is now that we have to sit with those feelings. You have to sit through them. And I tell you, the things, the feelings and the events that I've gone through over the past year that I would normally, I say normally, but in my active addiction, would absolutely be drinking or drugging over, getting through something like that is like an indescribable feeling of like pride and accomplishment. And also it builds my confidence so much because, you know, looking back on it, I'm like, I 100% would have been obliterated over this. And I sat with those feelings. I thought about it, you know, and we were able to move through that sober. And yeah, it's a beautiful, it really is a beautiful thing.
It's
hard.
Thing.
It's definitely
doesn't
hard, but
easy.
it is a beautiful
It's well
thing.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like any big emotion, because big emotions, they're just big. They can be happy. They can be sad. They can be angry. They're just big. They always made me so uncomfortable. Like, I don't like being happy because I don't trust it. I don't like being sad. This doesn't feel good. I don't like being angry because now I'm being an asshole. Like, you know, so I would just drink over all of these things. And then, like, yeah, like the biggest part of getting sober is having to deal with like emotional sobriety now. It's like, oh, I don't get to have something to change how I feel. I don't have, like, I was such a chemist. I was like, if I do this amount of this, this amount of that, and this amount of this, I'll feel like that. And that is how I want to feel. Not this, that. And today I can't do that. It's not an option anymore. And it's like, okay, now I have to be a big girl and be a normal person and just be like, this is how I feel. And, you know, doing the best I can with what I have. So if I am feeling like super angry, what's the best I can do? Probably remove myself from the situation for a moment so I can ground myself, recenter, and then come back with a fresh perspective instead of immediately like, let me pop something and then I will chemically come down from this anger. And that's something that a lot of newer people, you know, have a harder time with, is I don't know what to do with these emotions because I haven't felt them for X amount of years. And it's like, I forgot they existed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, just, you know, there's a concept in Buddhism and stuff of impermanence. And, you know, it's just that this too shall pass. I mean, nothing in this life is permanent, whether it's joy, whether it's pain, whether it's success, whether it's failure, you know. It's all impermanent. And so, like, if you're unhappy with your situation, I mean, don't worry about it. It's going to change. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, if you're happy about your situation, like, that's going to change too. Yeah. So be prepared for that, you know. Yeah. And, you know, life's a journey. Life's a roller coaster. There's plenty of ups and downs. So don't think just because you're up right now that you're going to stay up. Don't think because you're down you're going to always stay down. It will change.
I like that. I really think the only constant is change. Yeah. How fast our cells are regenerating and whatnot. The only constant is change. And every emotion I've ever felt has come and gone. It's just how I'm feeling in this moment.
Mm-hmm. If you can hold on for just a little bit of time in regards to the urges and the cravings and stuff like that.
It will pass.
It'll pass.
It does.
And more often than not, relatively quickly. You know, I've not had a whole lot of times in my life where I've had like a really long term ongoing urge, like I really want to drink, I really want to use for like days or weeks on end. They're more, you know, they're small battles that you kind of, you know, you have to sometimes just sit. Sometimes the only thing you can do is just sit. Sit on your hands. Don't do anything. Just don't go pick up.
Yeah, pull the sheets over your head.
That's the only thing you can't do. Like, just sit with it.
Right.
It will pass. I promise you.
I can't tell you how many milkshakes I have had in order to get through an emotion. Milkshake always helps.
No, 100%.
I've never had a milkshake.
I'm so sorry.
You said oat milk earlier. I fuck with some oat milk. So
I'll have to figure out how to make a good oat milk milkshake.
Get your oat milk ice cream and then put it in a blender.
That sounds all things fantastic.
That's a milkshake.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's an oat shake. Won't bring any boys to your yard though. I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness.
So I did kind of want to go back just a little bit, if I may.
Yeah.
So you had said something earlier about like, after you've gone through a relapse or something and people feeling embarrassed to come back in the rooms. And I completely get that feeling, and I have felt that way in the past. But 100% of the time, that is never my experience. When you go back in that rooms, the people in recovery, like, they are just elated to see you.
Absolutely.
They are so happy. They are not judging you. They are opening, like, they welcome you back with open arms. They are just ecstatic that you're there. And it's genuine. It is 100%
Absolutely.
Genuine. I can't, when I first came into the rooms and stuff, man, I was like, these are a bunch of fake ass people. Like, there's no way these people are that excited to see me and that interested in my life. But when I got to actually know him on a personal level, I'm like, no, that's real. That's amazing.
Yeah.
The people I've met in recovery, my community, my sangha is like, it's incredible. These people would do anything for me and I would do anything for them. And I think that's hard to find in the normie world. You know, the level of connection, you know, we have suffered, we have been through hell together, separately but together. And, you know, having that common bond, like, there's really nothing that can break us. We're so melded together as a unit. Like,
yeah. Especially spending time out there in addiction, you know, whether you're around other addicts or normie people, you still, like, everyone has an agenda. Whether they do or they don't, that's often the perception that people will have, is everyone has, there's an ulterior motive beneath every action somebody does.
Yeah.
And so then when we come back to, or for the first time come to sober people and we experience genuine kindness.
Yeah.
It's so unfamiliar that it's like this kindness as the thing is never genuine. It's always, well, what are you getting out of this? Mm-hmm. And they're not getting anything out of it.
They just want to help.
It's always just like, you're in the right place.
Altruism,
like, thank
is just
God you're
baked
here.
Right in.
Yeah.
It's great. So you had mentioned, like, shame and the difference in shame and guilt, and you nailed it, yeah. You know, feeling guilty over something I've done, feeling shame about myself personally. We've got to rid ourselves of shame. Shame kept me sick.
Mm-hmm.
Guilt can get me going. I can turn guilt into a positive motivator and driving force for, like, okay, I feel bad that I did that. There are actions that I can take to remedy that, to make that right, to make amends, and to be a better person moving forward. But shame, I can't do that with. Shame keeps me sick.
Yeah. Someone once told me to put down the bat.
Put down the bat?
That I was beating myself up with. You get it?
No, I still keep mine by my desk.
Okay.
I actually do have a bat by my desk, and people will come and they're like, why is that there? I'm like, you never know. Might need to break some decals.
But, like, this figurative bat.
That might be mine, but.
Oh, my goodness. This, like, emotional bat of, like, harsh words and just hating on myself. Like, that bat. That's not a good bat.
Mm.
It can change. We can change.
Yeah. We do have to be more kind to ourselves.
Yeah. I think people are very quick to accept certain things about themselves that they view as truths. But it's like, no, those things, those are the ones that you can change. You know, the things that you do feel shame about. Mm. It's like, yeah, like, because I do like separating shame and guilt. Because guilt, yes, you can be like, I feel terribly that I acted that way, that I did that. So let me make that right and then take actions in my life to not do that again to another person. Whereas shame is, well, I did that once. And so all I can think about is that I did that. And so then, you know, you think about it and then you're going to do it again. Because,
like,
what you do is what you think about.
Shame, like, ties me up in my mistakes. Like, my worth is my mistakes. And, like, it doesn't feel hopeful. Shame doesn't feel hopeful.
Yeah.
Like, anything can get better or I'll ever be able to do anything, like, good, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, guilt, I like how you said, can be a motivating thing as well.
Guilt and shame being different and having things that are true about yourself but can change. You know, this, like, we've talked about nothing stays the same forever. Everything changes. So it's like certain qualities about yourself can change. Your height changes throughout your life. The color of your hair changes. Eventually it'll be gray, you know, like your skin changes. Everything changes. And so if there are qualities about yourself that you ruminate on and feel shameful about, like, those are the things that can change with action steps. You don't have to keep yourself in that box. And I know, like, one of my experiences when I was, like, stuck in that shame box, I was, like, feeling guilty about things that I'd done and my active addiction, because they were kind of, like, thrown back in my face, and I was like, oh, that's uncomfy. I should probably drink about that. Let me drink about the things that I'm embarrassed that I did while I was drinking, because that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
You know, it's backwards logic, but it's logic you hear a lot from people who struggle. It's like, this makes no sense. I can tell this makes no sense, but this is the best thing that my brain can come up with to remedy the situation. And I think that's the importance of being plugged in, being connected with different people in recovery, so you can share that backwards thinking and then have someone relate and be like, this is how I got through that. know, whether it is, I sat on my hands and let it pass. You know, I went to a recovery group and was just surrounded by people in recovery, or I went outside, you know, baked in the sun, looked at the sun and said, thank you. Like, you know, whatever it is, just anything but continuing to feed that loop in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But what about, like, in the season change, right? Like, speaking about the sun, you know, it's about to get colder. And a lot of people like to stay inside. It gets wet. It gets cold. It comes the cold season. You get sick. Do your methods change with the seasons?
You know, they have to a little bit. Given that a lot of my hobbies and interests are outside, some of those do get knocked out during the summer. Luckily, we live in Georgia. You know, I can mountain bike year-round in Georgia. I go hiking in Georgia. When it snows, I make it a point to go hiking and stuff. Like, it's a lot of fun. But, yes, things turn gray. The leaves fall off. It's no longer green. It's no longer vibrant. It can be depressing. You know, seasonal affective disorder, sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are very real things. People are inside more. You don't see people on the street as much. Also, just the holidays can be very difficult for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Being around family can be very difficult for a lot of people. I know for me, my family gatherings, there's always a lot of drinking at those. There always has been. And so, you know, around the holidays when everybody's gathering a lot and there's a lot of that going on, yeah, that can be taxing. That can be difficult. So how do you combat that? You know, I guess you just got to double down on what's left. Pick up more on the other things that you still have on your self-care list.
See, I like what you said about, you know, like, yes, we live in Georgia, so we really can still do outside things, even though it's technically winter because it's really not that cold.
Yeah.
But that you make a point to go hiking when it snows.
That's really pretty.
Because you can't. That's beautiful. Something you can't do when it's sunny, you know? And so it's finding that what makes it, still finding what makes it special.
Yeah.
Still finding, like, a reason to have joy with it. Because I know, like, for me, there's things that I enjoy in the summer, and I'll be sad when it's gone. You know, I can't go dip in the river in the winter. That's too cold. I can't even do that in the fall. It's too cold. But there's still things, you know, about the winter. It's apple season. I love apples. Making apple cider, make apple pie, apple cobbler, baked apples. There's so many things you can do with an apple.
Strudel.
Apple strudel.
I'm a big fritter guy, actually.
Apple fritters.
I feel like we're going to go into the Forrest Gump talking about shrimp.
We're just going to have, after this episode, we're going to need to have a bunch of recipes in the show notes for oat milk milkshakes and everything you can do with an apple. But there's things that you can't necessarily do in the summer that you can in the fall, like corn mazes, carving a pumpkin. I still have never done that,
oh, yes,
but I want to. It sounds fun. You know, like the different.
That is shocking.
I'm sorry.
We're gonna have to dive into that after the show. That's interesting.
But you know, finding, like, shifting that perspective of, you know, well, I can't do these things now, and so instead of focusing on what you don't have anymore, focus on what you do have.
Oh,
like, yeah, the holidays can be stressful, but also they're only once a year, so that either means, thank God, it's only once a year, or savor it while it's here. You can pick. Are you going to enjoy it, or are you going to suffer through it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always try to stay optimistic on the positive side and stuff like that. So, I mean, I never dwell on the negative of the things that, you know, I don't have or can't do, because, I mean, like you just said, I mean, with the changing of the seasons, yeah, there are certain things that you can do, but now there's new things that you can go do. And so, yeah, I mean, just, you know, staying on that positive side. But also, I'm a very, like, I don't know, I'm very, like, no excuses to the point that we're, like, it doesn't matter. You know, if there's something cool that's 4 hours away, I'm like, okay, we'll wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. We're going to do that.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, talking about you can't jump into a river when it's cold. No, hell, like, I was in a glacier fed lake at the top of a mountain in Colorado, and there was, like, snow and ice all over the ground, and I jumped in. I literally,
you look like a polar plunge type of person.
Dude, I almost didn't make it out. Like it hit you like it was numbing. Immediately. It was so numbing. Yeah. Like my body almost just shut down. Like it was so cold. So.
And you have a smile on your face as you're talking.
As a little ice pop. Yeah, we started hiking out in Nederland, which is outside of Boulder, Colorado. And every year in Nederland, they have this festival called the Frozen Dead Man or Dead Man Festival or something like that. And we did like a 13-mile hike to the top of this mountain, and I jumped in a lake called Dorothy Lake up there, and it was cold, and I was gonna be at the Dead Man Festival.
So then really to rephrase, cool. I can't relax in the river.
There's no relaxing. Yeah.
That's in and out.
It's just a shocking experience.
Goodness, yes.
But what about for you, as the seasons change, do your coping mechanisms or self-care methods, do they change?
Well, I can't go outside as much because I do get very cold easily. But I like all the things you said about like, oh, I like to stay involved still. So like carving pumpkins or let's go do this fun activity. Honestly, recovery is a lot of fun. I've had so much fun figuring out riddles or just like random things with my friends. And I remember it and it's really good. Like I can go out and I don't have to worry about, oh no, there's like, am I going to get pulled over? Am I going to just all these things that could go wrong? Cause I can't drink or what have you like a normal person. So like I know but it's like a choice that I make every day. To stay sober. I don't know why I just went off on that tangent. I think I have ADD, but yeah, so I really like, there's certain different seasonal activities that lots of people do and partake in, and it is really fun to do those things sober.
Yeah, and I think like that connectivity portion, like doing those things with friends.
Yes.
Because it's like, that's the portion. Like, yeah, I may have done those things before, but...
You get to make new memories around
it. Yeah,
but
before, you get to have memories.
You get to have memories. Yeah. Like, memories are cool,
ones.
Y'all.
Good ones.
I remember when I got sober, that day, you know, I made that commitment, and I texted one of my friends, and I said, here's to remembering again. My memory is still awful. So that didn't live up to it. But, you know, being able to, you know, experience things with friends, because that was the big piece that was missing. You know, I was staying isolated or I was always broke, you know, so I couldn't go to a fall festival. I couldn't go buy an apple fritter. Like, I had no money.
Yeah.
And so being able to, you know, have people that I love and who love me back and go and enjoy and try to remember, see if my brain is actually being nice that day.
Yeah. No, life really is beautiful and it really is so much fun. And like, I have so much more time and energy being sober to engage with all of the things that I love to do. Like, absolutely. I mean, this is the most beautiful life and the most fun that I've ever had. I mean, people early on or people that are contemplating getting sober and stuff, they're like, how are you going to have fun? And like, dude, I'm having more fun now than I've ever had in my entire life. Like, hands down. Because, you know, me being the type of alcoholic that I was, I mean, I wasn't fixated on anything. We could be at an awesome concert, and I'm fixated on the bar or how I'm going to sneak away and use the drugs. That's all I'm focusing on. Mm-hmm. And that's the same in any scenario that you could put me in, whether, you know, it's a party or concert or festival or whatever. All I'm worried about is the drugs and alcohol. That is all my mind is thinking about.
Yeah.
I am freed of that obsession.
Absolutely.
And I can enjoy the present moment and what is going on in front of me, and I can really like dig into it.
Right.
And
I feel like I feel like I'm being the real me. Like living out my purpose and who I'm supposed to be and getting to do things that I actually do enjoy instead of just obsessing and jonesing or staying in that like just unhealthy place all the time. I was very spiritually and emotionally bankrupt. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I hit emotional bottoms. It was not something I want to do again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Feel you there.
I'm glad that I'm not alone. I get to do it with you people and my friends, and it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it is.
Well, as we wrap up here, what would be one takeaway that you would want someone struggling with season change or is thinking about relapsing? What's one takeaway you would give them?
I think probably the biggest thing that you can do is connect. The opposite of addiction is connection.
Yes.
And there's a beautiful community of people out there. There's a lot of fun, and you just have to engage with them. You have to go become involved. And you know, as far as like meetings go and stuff like that, I mean, I used to bounce around to a bunch of different meetings. And I wasn't really a meeting going person. I would hate going to meetings. I would go to them begrudgingly. I would go in right as they start and I would leave right in the end. I would go to different meetings. I didn't get to know anybody and stuff like that. But once you find your meetings, once you find your people, mm-hmm. that's when it starts getting fun. And you have to have fun with it. And it is a lot of fun. So like, dig in, find your people, find your meetings, find what works for you. If one particular sect or one type of meeting isn't the one, there's lots of them out there. There's lots of different types of meetings that you can go to. I go to like probably 5 different kinds of meetings. I like having all those different perspectives. I like mixing it up. I don't want to, you know, don't hear the same thing every time that I go in. So find what works for you. But find what works for you.
Actually do it.
Do it. You have
absolutely
to do it.
Absolutely learn the language.
Yes.
I like that a lot. I like what you said. The connection's great. Maybe my biggest takeaway or something to remember to just keep on my mind or on y'all's minds too. My therapist likes to ask me, what are you going to be thinking in 30 seconds, Katie? Because my brain likes to future trip, definitely. And like I said, all I have is this present moment. All we have is right now, and everything is always changing. So I'm not stuck right here, right now. Even though I'd like to be with you guys, I don't know. I don't know what I'll be thinking in 30 seconds. So I just think that's a cool thought.
Well, thank you guys for joining us here tonight. Absolutely. And to the viewers, this episode will be available next week on the Most High Media app. If you don't have it yet, what are you doing? It is the Netflix of recovery. We have all of our podcasts, documentaries, TV shows, so many recovery tools, and it's just good stuff. Go check it out. And thank you to all the sponsors who help make this show possible and keep Most High going. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Round of applause.
Thank you, guys. All right.